But the history of past and future we're interested in to the extent that it tells us what to do today and prepare to do for tomorrow. Where we can, we look at the prophecies and look for evidence for their fulfillment. And for example, in the second chapter of Daniel, we have Nebuchadnezzar's image. We have four major world empires, Babylon, Medo-Persia, Grecia, and Rome. And that's the way we think that they are fulfilled. But do we have evidence? And I'm thankful to Brother Jim Shucker for showing me the map of Italy, where we have Sicily at the bottom of the foot of Italy. And we see the stone smiting Nebuchadnezzar's image on the feet, knocking the legs out from under the Roman Empire. The Lord hasn't left much to our imagination there. We've looked at the second chapter briefly. Now we go to Daniel, the seventh chapter. And what we observe is four beasts. One of the beasts has three extra heads. Now, a lion does not have horns, nor does a bear, nor does a leopard. But the fourth beast has 10 horns, temporarily. That is until a little horn comes up, that makes 11, and removes three of the horns, and that brings us down to 8. But initially, the four beasts together begin with 7 heads and 10 horns. That the first head, which is the head of gold in Nebuchadnezzar's image, and it's a lion, a yellow beast. Both cases we have something that starts out with the yellow. And then we get down to the third beast, the leopard, that's on the yellowish side, as is the copper in the image. Let's see, I think we want to go to one slide previous, if we may. Okay, that would be the one. And let's see what I can do here. Okay, so we have Babylonia initially. That's true in both the image and the beasts. The second, Medo-Persia, with the capital at Pasargadae. And then we go next to the nation that controlled Israel and Judah, and that would be Greece, with Alexander, who was a Macedonian. His capital was at Pella. And that lasts for almost a dozen years. But then he dies, his son dies, and I think they get rid of his uncle as well. So in short order, the empire is divided among the four generals, starting with Pella. And then Israel is controlled by Alexandria in Egypt, as the capital. And then the capital is about somewhere around 198 BC, the Syrians take over under the Seleucid emperors, including Antiochus. And so the third capital to control them is the Syrian capital at Antioch. And we have three that are ruled by Grecian rulers, generally started by the generals of Alexander. But now we have a problem. Where did Thrace, the fourth Grecian power, enter into the scene? Because from the Seleucid emperors in Syria, they are conquered by Pompey in BC 64. So Rome really becomes the sixth head. But it is not that Thrace never does reign, but rather when Constantine takes the empire, that he starts in the east, and then he beats up on the emperor in the west and takes over the whole empire. But Constantine is smart enough to know that if he tries to rule from Rome, the head of the heathen religion, it won't be long before he gets his the throat slit. So instead, he builds the city of Byzantium into a capital for himself, modestly renames it Constantinople. By the way, the modern title for it, Istanbul, was simply a contraction of Constantinople. So the name is really still preserved. But when that happens, we note that Byzantium or Constantinople is not in the western part of the empire. It is really part of Thrace. And so the fourth Grecian power does take over. And now I will suggest that in Revelation 17, where we see the eighth beast take over, that I think would be the papal beast, whose civil power begins in 539 AD and continues for many, many centuries. Now, we see some evidence of this. Remember in Revelation in chapters 12 and 13, Revelation 12 shows the diadems are on the seven heads. Revelation 13, the diadems are transferred to the ten horns. The upper of these coins here, front and back, shows Constantine's coin with a diadem or string of jewels on his head. So yes, I think we see some evidence then. In fact, the earliest one that I have seen is Ptolemy in Egypt, has a coin minted in which he displays the diadem on his head. And you'll notice another thing, the backside of Constantine's coin, at least as Constantine sees things, he has a cross erected over the fallen dragon. So he associates the dragon particularly with the heathen Roman Empire. But we're told that the dragon gives his power to the beast, gives his power to papal Rome. Underneath it, we see another coin, a papal coin. That's the Pope, Leo XII, on the front side. And on the back side, we see Babylon hath been a golden cup in the hands of the Lord that made the nations drunken. So here I think we see some evidence for our understanding of prophecy. We may go down now to the next slide with the ten horns. Okay, here we see coins of 10 nations, 10 all Germanic nations, originally from the north, and they come down and take over the entire West Roman Empire. And we notice on each one of them, it shows the diadem on the coin. We have the Franks and the Burgundians in southeastern France. We have underneath them the Sueves from Portugal, the Visigoths in Spain. Then in the center up above, we have the Alamans or German and the French and Spanish words for Germany are Aleman, I think, to this day. We have the Vandals who went down into Africa and then took over Tunisia and came up into Sicily. In addition, we have in the upper right-hand corner, the Anglo-Saxons. Not a very fancy coin, but still displays the diadem. Next to it on the top are the Heruli, and it was their first king, Odoacer, that overthrew the West Roman Empire and took over for a period of perhaps 63 years from 473, I think it was, maybe 476 to about 539. And underneath we have two more nations, the Ostrogoths or Eastern Goths, and they came down to Italy and pushed the Heruli aside. And then we have another tribe that came down a little later, the Lombards, and that part along the west coast of Italy and north of Rome is still called Lombardy unto this day. So when the little horn comes up and uproots three other horns, I would suggest that that would be the Heruli, the Ostrogoths, and the Lombards. Although there are those who think it's the Heruli, the Ostrogoths, and the Vandals. I think now that since we see that each of these 10 nations, it's not 12 nations and it's not 9 nations, it's exactly 10 nations that display the diadem on their coins, we can see that this is the fulfillment of the 10 horns that have the diadems on their horns in Revelation chapter 13. Oh, we might just do a little side trip here. There's a significance to the diadem. When the Germanic tribes took over the Roman Empire, then they needed something that could allow them to do business in the eastern part of the empire as well as throughout the west. And that was by getting the permission of the East Roman Emperor to display diadems on their coins, whether the head was that of their own head or of the head of the Eastern Roman Empire. But that diadem meant license to do business throughout what had been the Roman Empire. So we may go on to the next slide. In Exodus, we have 10 plagues, but they are divided into the first three plagues that fall equally on the Egyptians and on the Israelites. Moreover, Moses does not execute those plagues, but in each case it's saying to Aaron, thy brother, do this, do that, and do the third one. And then we have, at the end of the third plague, the Lord says, I will put a division between my people, the Lord's people, and thy people, Pharaoh's people, that there be no more plagues in the land of Goshen, where my people dwell. And that's where Moses takes the dominant role in administering the plagues. The first three plagues I'm not much interested in at the present time, but I'll offer a suggestion, and I'm open to any other suggestions, but the waters turned to blood, which is also mentioned in Revelation, that would be the fall of the Roman Empire, whether it's AD 313 with Constantine taking away the persecution of the Christians as such, or whether it's in 476 when Odoacer overthrew the West Roman Empire entirely. The frogs everywhere, kitchens, kneading troughs, on the dinner tables. I'll suggest that was the Reformation. The third one where there was lice on man and in beast, I'll suggest that's the French Revolution and its reverberations throughout the rest of Europe, the rest of Christendom, in which the absolute monarchies of the past were replaced by the limited monarchies in which the people had some degree of voting, regardless of who counted the votes, of course. But we look at the last seven plagues that are on the Egyptians only, and I think these plagues in Egypt show us the major world events. If we were to look at the major world events since the flood, we don't find very many up until the 1870s. Perhaps someone might suggest that the Black Plague of 1348 may have been a world event, but not quite so worldwide as happened once the world became in communication with the rest of itself. And I'm going to suggest that the plague of the flies corresponds to the first major worldwide event, since the flood. And that was the Long Depression that began in 1873 and went into the 1890s, roughly two decades. The next one, the murrain, the disease that killed the cattle, World War I. The blains on man and beast, corresponding to the Great Depression. The hail with lightning and thunder and fire that ran along upon the ground, World War II. The locusts that were brought in by the east wind. And then finally, after they'd eaten up the second set of crops of Egypt, were blown out by a mighty west wind. And I'll suggest that that was communism that was swept in from the eastern communist countries, where it was creating a plague throughout the West, not only Western Europe, but also in the Americas as well. I thought, going back to the 1960 era, I thought, well, they were brought in by an east wind, but they were brought out, taken out by a mighty west wind. Oh, wind commonly symbolizes war. So maybe that would be World War III, but it would indicate that the west wind would eventually prevail and the eastern communism would be driven out. Well, I had a little surprise there. The next plague, number six of the last seven, a plague of darkness. 3 days darkness, so thick that it could be felt. No man could move from his place for 3 days. And I thought that would correspond to a deep depression. A little surprise there too. Finally, I don't think there's too much question about it. The death of the Egyptian firstborn, the heirs of the Egyptian kingdom, or in this case, corresponding to the heirs of the kingdom of this world, that it corresponds to the destruction of them at Armageddon, when there's no more kingdom for the mighty men of this world to inherit. So I think we can go on now to the next chart. That would be on the seven last plagues. Thank you. Again, we have the same plagues on the left, but we're interested in what the effect is of these. We'll notice four of the seven last plagues are destructive. The murrain that killed the cattle, number four, the hail with lightning and thunder and fire that ran along upon the ground destroyed the first two crops of Egypt, which would be the barley and the flax. And then the following plague probably occurred about 7 weeks later, when the wheat and the spelt had come up. The locusts ate up those two plagues as well, except neither of these plagues affected Goshen. So the Israelites were well rewarded. They had the food and they could sell it at a higher price, of course. And then the last plague is also destructive, the death of the Egyptian firstborn. So we'll suggest that that had to do with World War I, World War II, the communism, and the Armageddon. Well, as I say, I thought that plague number five here of the last seven, that of the locusts, would end with World War III driving communism into the ground. Instead, it was a Cold War, and it was revolutions in each country that did the job. I confess my mistake. After all, it was an east wind that brought it in, and that was not a world war. So why should a west wind correspond to a world war? But just as the east prevailed for a while, then the west finally prevailed until about 1989, when Eastern communism folded. Now, again, I thought that the plague of darkness, of 3 days and no travel, would correspond solely to the Deep Depression. Now, I'm not so sure of that at the present time, because what we are observing is a pandemic today. The government responses to it by printing more and more money makes a depression inevitable. What we've been observing is that international boundaries have been shut down so that most of us cannot go from one country to another and back again. However, it does appear that the pandemic that we are observing will lead to a deep depression. Finally, we have the death of the Egyptian firstborn, and I don't see how that could possibly be other than Armageddon. Now, yes, I did understand 60 years ago that communism was somehow to be defeated as the great world power. But no, I did not get it right as to how it would be destroyed. It was by revolutions rather than by a world war. And similarly, it looks like I missed the next plague being a plague of deep depression only. But rather, it looks like our current pandemic is the thing that feeds what will be the deep depression. Each of these world events has had a major influence on Israel, beneficial, each one, each step, but has had a detrimental effect on what we call Babylon or sectarianism. And so if the River Euphrates in Revelation dries up, in plague number 6, then it would say that the denominations that we see today will be starved for staying financially solvent. After that, I think the only thing left for its destruction would be the withdrawal of the support of the people, which I think would be done in Armageddon. I'll not go into more detail on these individual plagues and the effect that it has had on Christendom. But what we are interested in most of all is not just the intellectual knowledge of what in the world is going on, but what should you and I be doing about it? That is the thing that should be of the greatest interest to us. What should I do because of what I believe? If something is called a doctrine, but it has no application, then it's not a doctrine. I could call it a viewpoint, or I could call it even just an idea. But the things that we believe, which are important, are those that tell us what we should do. So I think we can go on to the next slide. What are the expected consequences of a pandemic, or panicdemic if you prefer? Normally, you would say if a disease gets loosed on the world, whether it is a biological weapon or not, you quarantine the ill. But now the response has been to quarantine not only the ill, but the healthy. Now, of course, that keeps people out of the sunshine. But it's the sunshine that kills the COVID virus in a couple of minutes in direct sunshine, whereas indoors it can last for hours or occasionally even days. So, of course, the death toll has skyrocketed. What's the effect? Lucifer knows that the people are frightened into doing whatever the government says they ought to do. We will also expect the economy will tank. Many jobs and incomes are being lost. The government is driven to print more money from nothing. And you have more money chasing fewer goods, the only possible result is inflation, like the hyperinflation they saw in Germany back in the 1920s. When will it happen? It'll happen sometime in the future. I suspect not very far in the distant future. Can they delay it for another year or another 5 years? We'll have to watch and see. But that hyperinflation, as in all history, assures that a depression follows shortly afterwards. What can you and I do about it? There are two things, as I have said before. First, get out of debt. Second, stay out of debt. If we wait until the depression hits, we won't be able to pay off those debts, and we each become a slave to the lender. Now, not only do we look bad in the eyes of the world, we risk giving our Lord a bad name in their eyes. So, one, get out of debt. Two, stay out of debt. I think we can go now to the next slide. What is our wise preparation? First, I need to change my character from what it is to the likeness of the Lord. That should be a number one priority, changing our characters. Next, do good unto all, and especially to the household of faith. After all, how will we be remembered by the world? They are watching our actions, whether they realize it or not. Are we doing good to other people? Or are we keeping to ourselves and saying, too bad about you? I'm looking for me first. Well, the second part is they want to know, how are you people treating one another? He may say, I know I'm not one of you, but how do you treat your own people? So do good unto all, and especially unto the household of faith. Next, in fact, perhaps a sub-bullet under that should be, we have those that we can witness to in our own households. Train up a child in the way that he should go. Train up a child to live right. Train him to love the Lord, and train him to earn an honest living. Now, I think there, an honest living doesn't mean treating them, teaching them how to gamble, but rather things which the people need, whether it has to do with food or health or carpentry work to fix homes that have damage or whatever. But these are the things that we need to train our children in. Next, and close behind it, to tell the world of Jesus' ransom sacrifice for the entire world. Jesus Christ died once for all. And to tell them of his coming kingdom for the blessing of all the families of the earth, the blessing of all the nations of the earth. That is the true hope for each and every one. Now, I have one other thing going on in this world. More and more we are seeing people who hate the Jews, who hate Israel, who report only bad things about Israel. Now, I've seen some video clips of Palestinian Arabs that speak very well of Israel, but that's not anything that I hear in the media here in this country. So when we see the anti-Jewish bandwagons forming here and there, and they want us to get on board, stay off those anti-Israel bandwagons. The Lord is bringing Israel back to the land. So as one sign at work said, either lead, follow, or get out of the way. Have nothing to do with the anti-Jewish sentiment that is forming here, just as it did in Germany when Hitler took power. Consider, too, the world is watching us. They will remember what we have done for others and for one another. In the kingdom, they will remember how we behaved. They will remember what we did for our brethren, and they will remember what we did for those who are in need in the present evil world. Now, we want to be in the truth, but the fundamental question is not, am I in the truth, but is the truth in me? Well, while we're reading, I just might mention the result of how they've handled the pandemic has been to call destroy small businesses and make the biggest businesses even richer. That might not be the intent of most of the people, but it certainly would be Lucifer's intent to centralize power.